Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark. You know, libido is a driving force, right? It's about vitality. And if you lose that, it's really, it's just awful.
Yeah, just pop a Molly, right?
There are doctors out there that literally specialize in this. So you can just look up colorectal hemorrhoidectomy doctor and somebody will come up.
AKA booty hole doctor.
Booty hole doctor.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Hey everyone, welcome to Dr. After Dark. Phone number, I remember at this time, 818-253-1693. Give us a call for the voice messages. I'll take some of those today, as well as the emails, which are always great. DrDrewAfterDark@gmail.com. Support the people, support the show. We appreciate it very much. And do not forget, check out the DrDrew.tv for the streaming show that's out there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I think you guys might enjoy that as well. Today, the guest is Jesse Jetski Jack Johnson. I almost called you Jackson, Jesse.
Jesse Jackson.
Jesse Jackson, craziness. I don't know where to start with you. Kill Tony, bad friends. You've been doing a lot of stuff lately.
Podcasting, like I really crazy. Found my groove there. Now I'm here. This is crazy.
Oh, good. But you started from music, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Trumpet player. Do you play instrument?
I mean dilettante, like serious dilettante. Like I played piano and I sang opera a little bit, but my son was a real keyboard player. Went to a music conservatory for a couple of years, so I know how rigorous that stuff is.
Yeah.
People don't know. It's insane. Music conservatories are insane. And real music performance, like virtuosity, you're just sitting there 12 hours a day practicing.
Yeah. It was a lot. That's kind of why I dropped out of school. I had a full ride scholarship on trumpet playing to Northern Arizona University, and it was too much work.
But it's waking up and going to bed,
yeah.
Trumpet and music theory and trying to hear things and
yeah. And I have the same work ethic with stand up, but it's just a lot more fun to be thinking of jokes all day.
Well, that but people, some people are really into them. They love it. They love the music, and you have to love it to do that, right? So you must love the comedy.
I love it, and I still like playing trumpet, but I don't like taking it too seriously
because
I kind of lost the fun out of it. So now I try to combine it into my stand-up.
In what way?
Well, you know, I'm still figuring it out because a guitar comic, I can't talk and play at the same time.
You can't play the trumpet and speak. I get that. I understand that.
Yeah, so I'm finding different ways to incorporate it. And
they, you know, that kind of training, they're gearing you up for a symphony orchestra, right? You're not exactly learning jazz. But I imagine you did do jazz and a lot.
Yeah, I did all of it. I ended up being in like a R&B band when I was 19, and I tried everything: jazz, classical, marching band. I even did like some percussion classes.
It must be a great thing to have that skill in your back pocket, though. You know, I mean, you probably don't appreciate it because you've just always done it. I imagine.
I'm glad I never quit.
Yeah,
I do appreciate it. I'm 33, so I've got a long time playing, and I've had some teachers tell me, like, when I wanted to go into comedy, you know, if you can just ride both tracks as long as possible, it'll pay off, and it has. It's fun to.
How did you end up with trumpet?
Well, I wanted to play the saxophone, but there were too many in the band, and then I wanted to play trombone, but my arms weren't long enough, so the teacher was like, maybe you go to trumpet, which made sense anyway, because my grandfather was a trumpet player. So
isn't that interesting how it sort of goes in family sometimes?
Yeah.
It's odd.
It is, yeah.
My wife's family has a bunch of reed players.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just clarinet, saxophone, clarinet, saxophone. It's like, what? All you guys?
Yeah.
So
well, my dad's a drummer.
Oh, that's
so it skipped the generation.
So interesting. Yeah. Well, and then comedy, was that something you found early?
Yeah, I think like to stand out, I would make jokes, or like when I would say something and I'd get attention, I would just keep saying the same thing. And
I always ask this question of comedians because most of them have a moment where it sort of caught them, where they caught the comedy bug. Like they just remember when they can usually point at something. Moment.
I remember like the first time I laughed the hardest I ever laughed, but it wasn't my joke. It was my dad took my sister and I to like an arboretum, like an outside, it was like some kind of outside park or something. And it was really quiet. And he's like, girls, let's sit down on this bench and close our eyes and just listen to the sounds of nature. And we close our eyes. And then he just farted really loud. It was so simple, but we were laughing so hard that he had to calm us down because other people were like, what's going on over there?
So I would argue that being infected by fart humor is a pretty good sign that you're going to be okay in comedy.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I want to do that.
And how did you get involved with Bad Friends?
Well, I worked at the Comedy Store. I was a door guy there. You have to audition to work there. And I was parking Bobby Lee's car and I got to talking to him. And he told me at some point they're going to get people on their podcast and... It was like 4 months later, I got a call from him. And
so interesting. We'll talk more about the door guy thing because most people that aren't in the comedy scene don't know what that is.
Door guy, like it's from the beginning of the Comedy Store when Mitzi was running it, she would have comics audition to work there. And so it's a job that's not about the money. It's more like a school. And you get spots, and the whole idea is you kind of work that program.
So late at night, there's an empty spot, they'll throw you in there kind of thing, right?
That's happened a lot, like, because you're just there. So if somebody doesn't show up or somebody's running late.
Yeah.
But it's great, and you get to meet all the comics. Like, I kind of have a confidence thing, so I wouldn't ever, like, just go approach Bobby Lee, you know, because I was, like, too scared at the time. But because I'm working there and we see each other every day, it makes it easier to, like, get to know these comics that can change your life, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the name of the show that Pete, what's Pete's last name? He did a show about...
Pete Holmes.
Crashing, that's what it was, yeah. That was the sort of door guy, sort of New York version of the door guy job.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. I mean, it's such a community. Everybody helps like each other out. I mean, my friend who's a comic, Chase O'Donnell, who you probably know...
Very well.
...opens for Christina. She told Christina my name, and I did her podcast, and now we're here.
Have you done her musicals yet, though? You've got it. Now you're a musician. Know. Why hasn't she pulled you into that? She pulled me in. I've done one.
You did? Oh, my God. I got to see that
one. Do you guys have the Oklahoma one by any chance? We should probably put that as part of this show.
I'll look for it.
All right, we'll play it for Jesse, because she will... please don't pay any attention to my musicianship. Please, whatever you do. Oh my God! Not only is there a pitch problem, rhythm is not my strongest suit. All right, while they look for that, this will be fun. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Which has these musicals. And
Of course. Yeah, they're so funny.
Oh, there it is. So here we go. We'll just play it for you before we go to the calls.
Don't laugh at my jokes too much. People will say we're in love.
They'll see.
Oh my goodness.
It's all right with me. People will say we're in love.
Oh, pitch.
There's that opera training, though.
There it is. And we're in the middle of a park. There's people everywhere, which you can't see behind the camera. There's people all over the place. This is one of about 10 takes.
I was just going to ask how many times.
And then we ran into that. She goes, do it again. Oh, the pitch. God.
So funny.
Yeah.
I love those videos.
And we did... many others, more embarrassing, because some of them we stood in the middle of people's picnics and things and did other parts of Oklahoma. Yeah, I got to do it again, I think.
Maybe Chase will re-release some of those outtakes.
She should, because there was some stuff we did that I was dying. And it's fun to work with her, too, because she lights up when she sees stuff she likes. She's like dying when I'm dying. And it's a lot of fun. But do you live in Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Arizona and like the Phoenix area. I moved a lot, so I don't ever know how to answer where from Arizona am I from, because basically the Phoenix area.
But you moved a lot in Arizona.
Yes, and I lived there for 26 years, and then I moved to Los Angeles
for comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you come into the Bad Friends world, right?
Yes.
What was that like?
It literally was life-changing. Mm. I don't know a better word for it. But Kill Tony was my first podcast I was on, and Tony Hinchcliffe and Brian Redband, they gave me so much love and everything. And that was the first time I started getting like followers and fans.
Was
and
it here?
In Los Angeles. But then right as I joined, the pandemic happened and they moved to Austin. And, you know, I have like an open door to keep going back there, but I stayed in Los Angeles for personal reasons. And then when I got on Bad Friends, it was like, it just skyrocketed with like followers and my confidence. And sometimes I think, you know, when other people believe in you, you start believing in yourself more. And
yeah.
And it's been great. It's been a wonderful year.
And where does the jet ski come from?
Honestly, my nicknames literally just sound like my name.
Okay.
So I've never ridden a jet ski.
Okay. Not something that else in your past. No. You mentioned last night you were requiring smelling salts. And I said, hold that for the podcast.
I don't know if I'd say requiring them, but I was in the green room they have smelling salts in the mothership green room. And so I was hanging out watching Roast Battle and we were just all the door guys there. And hey, have you ever tried smelling salts? And I've seen them on Rogan's podcast. I've seen them do them. You smell the salts.
Not because somebody's passing out, just to sort of go through the misery of smelling ammonia.
Well, this is great. We're here because I was wondering, like, I know nothing about it. I'm a risk taker. So I was like, let's try this. I've done a lot of drugs when I was trying to be a jazz trumpeter.
Uh-huh.
So I've quit now, but I was like, yeah, smelling salt seems safe.
Compared to that stuff.
Yeah. I wasn't snorting it.
So how did you find it?
I'm stupid. I was like, I found it in the green room.
No. But how did you find the experience?
It was great. I think I overhyped it so much.
The smelling salts.
Yeah. I felt a little bit hungover, to be completely honest, from the night before. And it like cured everything.
Well, because you get an adrenaline blast sometimes because the smell's so miserable. Your body reacts.
Is that what's going on?
What's one of the things that goes on? Yeah. Yeah.
But is it safe?
I mean, it's not great for your nasal health, you know, your sinuses, but did it burn? Did you get that whole experience?
Yeah, it felt like drowning a little bit.
Yeah.
Like getting water up your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't
know. Pure joy, huh? Pure joy.
I think I liked it so much because it was over.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Thank God that's over. Wow. Interesting.
Have you done them?
I have gotten near them, but I've never really done the full experience.
Let's do them right now. Can we get?
No, thanks. Not that interested. I got some calls here I want to get to, but let me do a voice message just because I didn't get to them last show. Just see if we can get a couple in here.
I just had a quick question for you.
Okay.
I know I've always heard that it is wrong to use Q-tips in your ear because it shoves the wax down.
Correct.
And, you know, maybe I'm talked or something, but I've still been using them this whole time. I'm 35 now. Mm. And if I'm not supposed to be using them, how the fuck do I get that shit out of my ear? Thanks, James.
All right. So Q-tips, do you use Q-tips?
Yeah.
So it's the leading cause of ruptured eardrum in the country. And also, if you just happen to hit it hard enough, you can disrupt the entire middle ear and fuck everything up. It does nothing for the wax except push it back against the eardrum, so which can affect your hearing more and makes it more difficult to get the wax out. Start with soap and water in the shower, dude, and then there's little syringes you can buy at the pharmacy store. There's bulbs and syringes and things. Just rinse them out. That's what you do. That's what, if you came to me to get the wax out, that's what I would do.
You put a syringe in your ear?
Yeah, you just kind of hold it back, and it's a bulb, but you squirt it in, and it's designed to rinse the wax out.
I feel like I'm leaving this podcast. When I do leave tonight, I'm going to feel not very proud of myself. The smelling salts, the Q-tips.
Well, let's talk about drugs, too. Let's go all the way down that path. Were you just a drug abuser or were you a drug addict?
Dr. Drew, what are you...
I'm just asking the questions.
Yeah, but I felt some judgment.
No, I'm not judging you at all. You're a jazz musician. What are you supposed to do?
Well, yeah.
At least you didn't start shooting heroin like Coltrane.
That's true. I never did the heroin.
Yeah.
Meth.
The heroin.
I never did the heroin or the meth. That was the Arizona slogan. Not even once. Well, so I did everything else, just not meth. But I just was pretty... like hardworking in high school, straight A's. I was in all the extracurriculars, and once I graduated, I started smoking weed and drinking, and then it was a gateway for me.
Did you have trouble stopping?
Yeah, I kind of like dropped out of school. Mm. I started working at this smoke shop. A weed shop. And from having like so much potential out of high school, I spoke at my graduation, had this full ride scholarship. I think I was just like self-destructing, self-sabotaging. And so I...
Or you just got strung out on something.
Yeah, that could have been too.
Yeah.
But I felt like I would never want to encourage someone to do drugs, but I did feel like that was a necessary part of my path because I had experience. And yeah,
did you need help stopping, or did you just let it go?
It kind of just like I kind of just reached this rock bottom for me where I just wasn't doing anything, and my mom, she stepped in and she saw like how I was living. I got like my first apartment, and she came and she was like, "This isn't good," and she stepped
in. A lot of people don't appreciate, for some individuals, not everybody, but some people, weed will take them down like that. Just weed is enough.
That's why I can't do it no more.
It's so powerful. It's so powerful now.
I feel like such a square, but it's true. Like,
it's not everybody. I'm not saying everybody's going to end up like that, but a lot of people get taken down by it, and they're not aware of it because it's so widely used and so accepted.
Yeah.
Some people do fine. I know lots of comedians, they're fine. But I've also seen a lot of people get in trouble with it. And some people need help stopping. They can't.
It could become very habitual. And then that's like, I think I replaced my passion for creating with smoking weed. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I was doing.
Well, it's so, it blocks your insight too. Did you get manic or anything? Did you do any stuff with that stuff? Did you start having grandiose thoughts?
Yeah,
that's all the weed. Yeah.
I think, you know, the term permafried, is that a medical term?
Yeah, no.
that happened to me.
but it again, this is a syndrome we're seeing more and more now, where these young people are sort of, you know, after a couple of years of it, it's so concentrated. It's up to 100% concentration.
Oh, yeah,
THC,
it's so
now.
Strong.
And people are doing dabs. I watched Luis J. Gomez do dabs during the show and keep functioning. I'm like, how do you do that? How do you do that? It wouldn't take you to a bad place.
It makes you
not able to do things. It makes you sort of stop working.
Yeah.
It makes you grandiose. You have all kinds of ideas about how you're the next whatever. And
it's so funny how going through that, and then it humbled me when I quit. And now that I am gaining success, I don't see it.
Sure. you don't see your success.
Yeah.
Yeah, but before you were thinking grandiose. Yes. But that's the drug. The drug does
it's
that.
It's so funny.
Not everybody gets that. Not everybody gets that. But and then some people need actually 12-step to stop because it can be so powerfully alluring and they love it so much.
Yeah.
So, well, good. I'm glad you're out of that. And usually hallucinogenics mix into there too.
Yes, that's what I was doing.
And God knows, maybe it's the combination of all this stuff that really does the trick. I worry. Do you notice any persistent mood problems or anything? Because I worry about the hallucinogens doing that to people.
Like long term effects
of mood.
I don't know because I did my first theater tour this year and we were playing for thousands of people and I didn't realize when I got done with it was a 3-month tour, I got really depressed. But I think it was from the adrenaline.
Could be.
But now I don't know if I'm having some long term effects.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like since time has passed, I've been more consistent and regulated.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you've heard that from other comedians too, just the adrenaline drop from doing shows.
A little bit, not quite as vivid as what you're describing. Are you exercising?
Yeah, I need to be more consistent, but I hike a lot. That's my
diet, sleep, exercise can go a long way to help me.
Yeah, the tour was not very healthy. We were on a bus. There was not a lot.
As we
say,
hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Right, and those are things you just got to pay attention to for all of our health. Right.
Yeah.
And so some of it might just be lonely because you're with everybody and out in the excitement and stuff, and then boom, all of a sudden you're back home. All right, let's take some calls, you and I. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do this. This is Chris. We got a bunch of interesting calls here. We'll take some more voice. Did I answer the voice message? I forget what his question was. Even.
Q-tips.
Oh, we did the Q-tips. All right, that's right. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
We're good. What's happening there?
So I've been on testosterone therapy for about a year and a half, and it was a small amount. And as part of my follow-up for that, it was an FNP that detected it. My PSA levels are very high. So I've been taken off of it, and I'm waiting to see a urologist in about 5 days. And I'm curious what kind of effect the replacement therapy could have on PSA levels, considering my age, I'm 38, and outcome scenarios like that.
Okay. And have you ever been told you have an enlarged prostate?
No.
And is there prostate cancer in your family?
No.
How high was your PSA?
She tested, the first test was, I think, 9.2, and the second one was 9.4 about a week later.
Okay. Jesse, anything in your camp?
Dr. Drew, I don't understand any of this medical jargon.
Okay, good. Well, maybe you can help me clarify that. So he's on testosterone.
My walnut's in pain.
Say it again. The what?
I said my walnut's in pain.
Yeah.
Okay, I got that.
No. Do you have testicular pain?
No.
Okay.
Right. Urinating is, I'd say, normal. Maybe the last little bit takes a little effort, but not really.
So he's 38. He shouldn't be on testosterone, frankly, unless there's some medical problem causing low testosterone. In his age group, obesity would be the number one cause of low testosterone. If he has low testosterone because of some endocrine problem, that needs to have a name. Like, what's the diagnosis that requires the treatment of the testosterone? Otherwise, you're essentially just putting yourself in harm's way. So what kind of harms could he develop? Well, as you're finding out, the PSA, prostate-specific antigen, this is a marker for prostate cancer, right? Mm. But many other things can elevate PSA too. Just having a large prostate. And actually having a large prostate, a big one, actually is associated with a lesser risk of prostate cancer. And those guys sometimes have very high PSAs. And testosterone supplementation could raise the PSA for those guys, right? So one possibility here is he's got a big prostate. It's kind of young to have a big prostate, so it's kind of weird. Whole thing about the elevated PSA in his age group is odd. But, you know, sometimes it happens early. Could testosterone increase his risk of prostate cancer? Not really. It doesn't seem to cause prostate cancer, but it can accelerate a prostate cancer that's already there. So I worry about two things for you, Chris. One is, you know, that you already had prostate cancer underlying this, and it's sort of bringing it out by taking testosterone, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Not causing it, it's just making it more apparent. Versus you just have a big prostate. You said you have a little urinary restriction when you try to pee. That suggests more that kind of thing. And maybe you just, you're one of those guys that's going to have a big prostate your whole life, and the high PSA goes along with that sometime. But the right thing to do is to see the urologist, okay?
5 days.
Okay.
Count him down. He's got BPE, big prostate energy.
BPH, benign prostatic hypertrophy, that's called.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
But Jesse's thing is BPE. BP, I like that. All right, here we go. You should be able to participate on this one. This is Mike. What's up, Mike?
Dr. Drew, how are you?
Hey, before you get into this, Mike, I'm good. I just happened to think about something. Were you stuck in a trailer with Bobby Lee going around the country? Was that part of the comedy tour group you were
with? Oh, yeah, tour bus, tour bus.
With Bobby Lee.
Bobby Lee, Andrew Santino.
Did you have that problem too?
Oh, Andrew was there to give you some sanity.
Yeah, okay. He was dad. Right. Bobby was crazy mom.
Oh, my God. All right, I want to hear more about that. But Mike, we'll get to you now. What's going on?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I wanted to reach out today. And also, Jessica Johnson, love that she's on the show today. It's amazing. So a little bit of background. My wife and I, we had our first child about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before then, we had a great, great, sexual relationship. Things are fantastic. But since birth, my wife, she has not been able to bounce back to what she was before.
Right.
As far as pleasure, you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have the sensitivity that she used to.
Mm.
So for me as the husband, I really want to, sex is not, I want to make sure she's feeling good too. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I just want her to be back to what she was.
How old is she?
So she has talked to her doctor.
How old is she?
Oh, she is, she's 34, 34.
And is she on any medication?
She is for her thyroid.
What is she on?
Oh, I think it starts with a T.
So just like, she's just on thyroid hormone, like thyroglobulin, something like that. Hmm?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's right.
Okay. She has some endocrine disturbance. She has hypothyroidism, and that can be isolated or can be part of something else. Did she breastfeed?
Okay. No, she tried to, but it didn't work out. Okay. So we ended up going with formula.
Any difficulty getting pregnant? Was there a fertility campaign?
No, actually, it was quite easy. Once she was off birth control, it happened pretty quickly.
And she's not on birth control now?
She is.
Oh, well, that can affect. Is she on the same birth control as before?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Well, birth control pills, you've been on hormonal contraceptives?
Yeah, isn't that kind of like the last guy taking testosterone? I feel like this is like she's taking a bunch of estrogen.
It is actually a bunch of progesterone. And the progesterone for some women really shuts them down and affects their sensitivity and everything.
Yeah.
And after pregnancy, everything changes. And so, I wonder if she's having a reaction to the birth control pill different than she used to experience it. So she might, you know, maybe get rid of some of the potent progesterone. Maybe the doctor can talk about getting some estrogen in there. Secondly, there can be other kinds of ovarian dysfunction after pregnancy, and testosterone can drop too. I read on your screen here that the doctor sent her for pelvic floor physical therapy.
Yeah, that's kind of what they were thinking. They weren't really sure what was causing the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought that maybe she could go and speak to someone that specializes in that and could help her out. And she is trying to get an appointment right now. She has not seen the doctor yet.
Yeah, physical therapy, that's an enlightened approach. I like the idea. It can so, you know, all that musculature down there can affect, particularly after, you can imagine. Did she have a vaginal delivery?
Yes, without complication.
Yeah, but you can imagine this stress. You know, everything's different now down there, and it can feel different. Is her libido the same, or just her sexual responsiveness?
Well, that's also a thing too. I think her libido has changed.
Yeah.
I feel like you know, she's not. You know, it's gone down a bit, and I feel like now, you know, where we're almost 2 years post having our child, you know, she's. She enjoys sex now. We have, you know, it's great. Our sex life has bounced back, but I feel like it's not what it was, and she's doing it more for me.
Yeah.
I mean, so I want to make sure that she's back to what she was and to make sure she can enjoy it.
Okay, Jesse.
The hormones are so crazy. Like being on birth control in the past, we were talking about how many drugs I did and when I was being a jazz musician, nothing like acid. You know,
didn't
shrooms.
Do acid.
Like I know I've done
it all,
those like hard to me hard drugs, but. Nothing changed my core more than birth control.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd had mood swings, and I felt like a different person. I wish there was a better way to like balance all those hormones out.
Well, I mean, could she consider something like an IUD?
Yeah, I mean, I think that she's open to all sorts of options. We definitely, you know, I think that whatever could get her back on the right path.
Yeah.
Is what we'd want to do.
I just think women are, she's a little young even for perimenopause, but the changes after pregnancy, I just, not enough is made of the hormonal situation, I don't think, and particularly the effects of birth control pill, and that birth control pill effects can change after pregnancy. So if there's anyone out there, there's a guy named Andrew Goldstein in Washington, D.C. that runs a clinic, I can't remember the name of it. Can you guys look it up for me? And he... I think his name is Andrew Goldstein, if I remember right. And it's like women's, I can't remember, but he does a lot of work in this area. And you might just look at their website and see if there's any resources there for you. I think the physical therapy is a great idea. Centers for Vulvovaginal Disorders, Washington, D.C. Click on D.C. Did his name get associated with this thing, guys?
Yeah, the Andrew Goldstein.
Yeah, so there you go. He's got a whole website. You can check it out there. And he makes a big issue of hormonal contraceptives and the effects, sometimes long-term, they can have on women's libido and sexual functioning. And so there's a lot going on here. There's definitely a lot to look into.
It's a central theme here. Get off the drugs.
Yeah, it is kind of a central. I kind of agree. Oh, that's not the Andrew Goldstein. I don't think the maybe he is the guy.
Yeah, you don't want to go to the wrong one.
Yeah. This is the zone we want to be in. Oh, yeah, that's him. That's him. With Ishwish, the Study of Women's Sexual Health, Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. These guys are really good, and they don't get enough play in the public. Yeah. He was the previous president of the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, Ishwish.
What a title.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And he did some research, and he actually showed that some women, if they have their screwed up libido from the high dose progesterones, it can be permanent. Like 20% of the time, it's permanent.
Dang.
And there's a whole world out there of people that have permanent libido problems from antidepressant medication. I actually did a podcast with that group, and they just never regain their libido.
It seems like the opposite of what an antidepressant should do.
100%. And it is such that people don't really appreciate how much of a you know, libido is a driving force, right? It's about vitality. And if you lose that, it's really, it's just awful.
Yeah, just pop a Molly, right?
You know, I wanted to talk about more about Bobby for a second. I love my friend Bobby Lee, but that dude was a real deal drug addict.
Yeah, I've heard stories.
Did he ever tell you the story about his mom chasing after him through the fields in her Impala?
No.
Was it an Impala, I think? Wasn't it something like that? And how he ran away from drug treatment or something, and so she went after him, and he said he was running through a field, and he could just see the front of the car going up and down over these hills as she came after him cross-country.
The stories are hilarious, but I'm glad I never saw it. His mom is so sweet, too, by the way.
Oh, is she? I've never met her.
Yeah, I met her when we did their show in Phoenix. She's so, so sweet.
Boy, he put her through a lot. Ooh, this got a lot of interesting stuff going on here. All right, this is Matt. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Dr. Mommy, how's it going?
Good, man. What's happening?
So I have some like weird numbness going on in my fingers, toes, and then occasionally like my dick. And it just comes out of nowhere. And my doctor, I asked about it. Literally, I'm so fucking tired of them just constantly saying everything is long COVID and I can't get a different answer.
Oh, so you have long COVID. You're known to have long COVID.
Yeah, and I've been to the pulmonologist, had the scans that show, like, my shitty lung health and all the spots and whatnot. Mm. So, yeah. But, like, everything I have, if I have a new issue, he just classifies it as long COVID. The only thing recently that he's given me a separate diagnosis for is POTS. Oh, and even geez. That, he said, was, like, really inconclusive.
Right. Have they done nerve conduction studies on you to see if you actually have neuropathy that's causing this numbness?
No, I don't even know. I haven't heard that. So, no, okay. I don't.
Okay. How long you had long COVID for?
So, I've been dealing with it for about, I guess it'll be 15 months.
Oh, God. All right. And it's from the COVID, not from the vaccine?
I don't know what it's technically from because, like, I never had, when I had COVID, it was never a big deal. Just the only thing I had that has caused me issues is long COVID. And basically I found out about that by having pneumonia, and having it like two times really quickly, within a span of, I think it was like 3 months.
And what are the main symptoms? Fatigue, mental fogginess, cough, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Fatigue is the biggest one. My lung health is just like, I have, I think I'm at like, 76% lung health, the pulmonologist told me, or something like that.
Do you smoke?
However,
cigarettes?
He quantified
that. Do you smoke anything for that matter?
I smoke weed, yeah. Okay. I was going to say I don't smoke.
Well, that causes sort of a chronic bronchitis, and that's not going to help that. You know, when you say 76%, you're talking about really the airway function, and that's concerning. You're going to make that worse.
Yeah, I've been trying to stop and trying to vaporizing and things like that. But it's really helpful for like, I have ulcerative colitis also that I've had since I was really young. Jeez. And that's,
what's that?
Yeah, that's the pot.
Jesse's really interested. What's this? So that's called inflammatory bowel disease.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Juicy's there.
She's here.
What's up? Sorry about your colitis.
it's a immune attack on the lining of the colon. It can be, before we had treatments, it was devastation. We'd have to take the colon out. They'd be able to get cancer. It was just bad. Now we have a lot of treatment for it. So are you on something?
So the latest thing is they gave me some pill. I forget what it is. It's for like that I'm supposed to take to try and calm things down when I have a flare up. But basically, I mean, I still had an awful time for a little bit. It's just a shorter amount of time.
Does it hurt
now when I take that
pill? Yeah.
It's too bad you don't have the numbness.
Yeah, super painful.
You get to pick where the numbness.
No, okay. You don't get to choose that.
Nice.
Meselamine, is that what they're giving you?
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and then
that's the one.
Right. And so that's a mild medicine, and it means you're probably having mild flares and stuff. That's good news. Have you ever been on immune suppressive medicines?
Not that I know of, no. I mean, honestly, I've been like kind of a shitty patient in that regard. I've tried to avoid taking long-term pills, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'm asking all that because I wonder how diligent they've been in working you up for some weird infection that is not long COVID, just some other weird infection you got from having had the immune suppression, but you've never really had that. So let's take that one off the table for a second. You know what? Have you looked at any of the web resources for long COVID? There's a lot of people trying a lot of stuff out there, and some people are having success.
I have, but I honestly, the thing is I get like overwhelmed. If there's any one like particular one you could recommend, I'd appreciate it.
I'm going to recommend two. A friend of mine got long COVID from the vaccine. I'm just going to tell you, I had long COVID from COVID and I took fluvoxamine and it worked like crazy for me. Okay. Friend of mine got long COVID from the vaccine and he's actually gotten better with Ritalin, strangely enough, which is isn't that interesting?
I think I have long COVID now that you mentioned it.
I need some Ritalin. I'm going to recommend it to you. And there are two resources out there. One is covidlonghaulers.com, covidlonghaulers.com. Dr. Patterson and Dr. Yogendra are having a lot of different success with stuff. So I would check those guys out, covidlonghaulers.com. And then Pierre Corey, K-O-R-Y, has made a practice now of treating long COVID. He's reporting some success. Again, there's no literature out there. There's no good resources per se. You're kind of on your own, but there are people treating it, trying things, and having some success. So, okay, those would be my two suggestions.
Yeah.
All right?
All right. I appreciate
it. Man. Good luck, buddy. That's difficult. I know you get addled by some of this medical stuff, but it's kind of interesting, no?
It's really interesting, yeah. I don't understand half of it, but I'm really fascinated.
Let's see what else. Would you pick some of these with me here?
Let's pick a lady.
Okay, a lady?
Yeah.
Stephanie, at what point? Here we go.
That's a good one. Sorry.
Hello.
Hi, Stephanie. What's going on?
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I need help.
Okay, good. You're here with me and Jesse. We're here to help.
Hi.
I saw you in St. Louis on the Bad Friends podcast.
Oh, wow.
How were they?
They were really good. They were really good. It was really funny. It was a good time.
That was a fun show.
Yup. Okay, can we get straight into me asking you a question?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. I got a hemorrhoid. Okay. And this bad boy is coming in and out, in and out. Mm. When is enough enough? When do I get this thing cut off, and who do I go to? Is there a booty hole doctor? Like, what's going on?
Jesse, you want to help? You pick the call.
Is there a booty hole doctor? I think maybe, like, that seems like a Magic Mike character. but anyway, I don't quite understand what the hemorrhoids are.
Because, let's start with that.
I've heard people talk, she says it comes in and out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a tapeworm.
No, not like a tapeworm poking out. Let's get some hemorrhoid pictures up there. Not real ones. We'll get cartoons. Don't you worry. These are little cartoony things because these guys want to make it possible for, there we go. Let's see here. Okay, none of that looks particularly good. Keep going. I guess that second one in from the left on the upper thing kind of gets the idea. It's a little cartoon. So they're essentially swollen veins, essentially. There's a whole plexus of veins around the base of the anus there. And for some people, genetically, they're prone to these things getting sort of irritated and then swollen and then engorged. And then they can thrombose. They can get clots in them and they do kind of go in and out depending on how inflamed they are.
They like come and go.
They can literally come and go completely, or they can kind of stay put but sort of literally pop in and out. Can we?
But if it's a vein, you can't remove it, right?
You can. There are various procedures. Yeah, they actually go in there and just take it out. You can see that there's a clotting procedure there.
Can
going
you keep
there.
It when they take it out?
No, I don't think they've ever done that.
I'd keep mine.
It's a little rough. Let's look up hemorrhoidectomy. Let's see. We've never done this before. Hemorrhoidectomy, ECT, ECT. OMY. There you are. Where they surgically remove it. Let's see. Let's keep going. That's a, yeah, you can't really see what's going on with any of this. What's the matter, gentlemen? You're getting a little squeamish in the booth. I see you guys kind of shifting around there. Okay.
It's Halloween season.
It is
indeed.
I
don't know when this comes out.
This third one from that one. Yeah, let's take a look at that. So.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
So there's sort of, that's an actual surgical excision of it. They can band it. They can excise it. There's some newer procedures that make it not nearly as painful. It used to be a terrible procedure. So the good news is, Stephanie, it's not as bad as it used to be. And it is something that people will do. There are doctors out there that literally specialize in this. So you can just look up colorectal hemorrhoidectomy doctor and somebody will come up.
AKA booty hole doctor.
Booty hole doctor. It's another way of saying booty hole doctor, but it's a colorectal surgeon, hemorrhoidectomy. And it should be no problem. Is yours painful?
You know, sometimes it's just after my second kid, I have more problems with it, but I'm in the trenches. Like, I'm like leaning on my left cheek, sitting in my work chair right now.
Right.
It gets miserable.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, who do I even call?
Yeah.
Who do I even talk to? I don't even know. I saw you on Instagram and I was like, I know who to call.
It's called Jessie.
I get it removed. Keep it if you can.
But she's.
All right, I'll send you a picture.
Yeah.
I'll sign it. I'll get Bobby to sign it for you.
I love that you have good humor about this, but what she's describing though is very typically the case, which is after pregnancy, all that pressure down there and the lack of venous return, you get more hemorrhoids. And once they get sort of established, they can kind of stick around.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, so
yeah.
Listen to Stephanie.
Like, it's a little bit more familiar than
you might. In the meantime, while you're waiting for the surgical evaluation, get some Anusol. Anusol cream is pretty good. Hot baths, all that's helpful.
Yeah. All awesome. Right. Well, thank you, Dr. Drew.
You bet, Stephanie. Thank you. All right, keep looking. Here's another. Joey's a female, huh? Okay, we'll stay with females. Females are generally, I don't know, I just think they're more interesting.
Recently pregnant.
Well, they're more interesting.
Seems like all these symptoms from pregnancy.
Oh, yeah.
Why haven't we fixed that yet, doctor?
Well, we have, but we have to pay it. Listen, one of the problems is we don't pay attention. We dismiss a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
And we can do stuff. We just have to pay attention and take women's complaints seriously. Look, Joey, hold on 1 second. We're going to be there in 1 second. I was talking to... wrote the feminine mystique. Naomi Wolf.
Yeah.
And she was talking about menstrual irregularities after vaccine therapy for COVID. And I was like, women's periods, they get affected by everything. Come on. And then I started hearing that there was really like unpleasant for people and it was affecting their ability to get pregnant and it was common. And I thought I had to go publicly apologize to her. I said, I was very dismissive. And we should not dismiss women's issues so readily, particularly as men. But women do it too. Women also dismiss it. But women,
there's
physicians.
So many issues, especially like after pregnancy.
There's so
it just
many
feels
issues.
Like, can you even fix it? It's like a.
You're right.
Where do you
and
even
women
start?
Suck up so much, they just take it. You know, they just go, oh, well, I'm just going to move. You know, that's why I wanted to be a mom. So this is what I get. You know, it's like, no, there are things we can do to help you. Joey, speaking of help, what can we do for you?
Yeah, so I was just recently diagnosed bipolar about 3 weeks ago, and I was listening to the podcast where a woman called in and she was talking about how she had just left a marriage where she was with someone who was bipolar and how much it affected her. I've been married for 10 years, and I was sitting there after the podcast and I was thinking, yeah, I've been pretty toxic, and I'm wondering, what do I need to do? Like, what kind of therapy? What do I need to do so that I'm not being a toxic wife? And also kind of what's wrong with my husband? Like, what's going on? Because I, like, thinking back some of the things she was saying, you mentioned something about shame, about how that being a trigger, that is a trigger for me. And, I mean, yeah, I've been toxic. I have.
Well, good for you for being so open and honest with yourself. And by the way, asking questions about the partner, too, is equally important. Good for you. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you're even acknowledging that you feel like you've been toxic and wanting to change it seems good to me.
Sort of extraordinary. Can you give us some examples, perhaps, of what you've been doing?
Sure, I can give you two examples. One that's more funny, and one that's more sad.
Okay.
One example is when we were first together in college. I don't know why, I just got this wild hair. I was pretty manic. Now, looking back, I understand it's the mania at the time. And I was like, it would be so funny if I got to test his love for me.
Oh, boy.
And there was these woods behind our dorm room.
Test love.
And I told him I was going out to my car. And I went out to my car, and I sat in the woods, and I watched where I could see his dorm room window to see him just waiting for me to see how long it took him to notice I was gone. Mm. And I was just having the greatest time. And then I realized I was out there for like 2 hours.
Oof.
And then whenever I got back, he was like, what happened? I was looking for you. And I told him about it. And he was like, that's really weird.
That's weird. It is a little weird. And I agree.
I don't know why I did that.
And so what's the sad one? Go ahead.
That was probably sad as well. Probably more sad for me, but just out there in the woods, like, he'll find me. But anyways, the more sad one is, you know, we're doing laundry in the house. He had just got off work, and I was like, hey, can you help me do some laundry here? We're further into our marriage at this point. We have one kid. And I'm like, can you help me do some laundry? And he's like, I will. I've been at work all day. You know, just usual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a switch. It was like pure rage. Mm. And it was like a wicker basket, and I just threw it on the ground and like shattered it.
Mm.
And I'm just pissed. And all the only thing I can describe it as, it's like a toddler throwing a fit.
Yeah.
It's like so much emotion, just sobbing, crying, angry. And he just sat there flat affect. I mean, nothing. He just sat there watching me. And finally I like calmed down, and he like grabbed his keys, and he was like, okay. And left. And I was like, what? And there's other stuff. I did grow up in a very toxic household. So yeah. I was used to being amplified. And I think that's what I was used to.
Did you have any sexual abuse or physical abuse growing up?
I had physical abuse. So, and I also, when I was younger, I was in a car accident. This is when I was 2 years old, and I was ejected from the car.
Oh,
so I had
God.
A traumatic brain injury, frontal lobe. And so for a long time, that was what doctors told me, was that, you know, my mom as well, she had a frontal lobe injury. So I was very aggressive as a kid. I kind of had a lot of issues self-regulating.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it's taken doctors a long time to... because I do take medicine for like epilepsy. There's also some damage in there. So it's taken a long time for doctors to kind of piece together.
It's interesting, but Joey.
Yeah, my mom.
Crazy. So interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have some ideas. What do you think? I'll let Jesse talk to you first. I got some ideas.
It seems like, it seems really cool to me that you aren't like wanting to play a victim and you're wanting to get better. I think that's really mature and like awesome. And
so much so though, Jesse, it gives a medical quality to this whole thing.
Yes. It's like when you have these like feelings, like you can't stop them, but you want to.
Right. They're like seizures in and of themselves, but her personality and her psychological functioning is sort of good. So she has insight. Like, what was that?
Yeah.
You know? And very interesting. I agree with Jesse completely. And then the husband, like, what's up with him? Was his mom kind of difficult, or was she?
Yeah.
Was she somebody he had to take care of all the time?
He also, I mean, he has his own problems. First met, we were both kind of wild. For him, I mean, it's embarrassing now. We're different people now, very clearly different. But he was very into drugs.
Mm.
I mean, there was one time that we robbed a concession stand together. It's a lot. We grew up together. We'll say that. We were both kind of rough and tumble in college. And then after
rough
that,
and tumble. This is more like
it's like a Bonnie and Jekyll and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde, but what was the Woody Harrelson movie, Natural Born Killers?
Yes.
Here they are. So interesting. So let's talk about, so I don't know what's up with him. It just, you know, the things that occur to me is like, he's been a caretaker probably his whole life. And I just think he's hopped into that caretaker role. And the flat affect and stuff is probably him dissociating, which is something he learned how to do probably in his childhood. But you're, you know, so you have chaos, you have brain injury, you've got a lot of stuff going on. You have insight, you have desire to get better, all these things. You know what I think you ought to really think about getting is what's called formal neuropsychiatric testing. It's actually like a full day and sometimes okay. 2 day testing of how, what is your psychological functioning and what is the biological component? What's the neurological overlay? You know, how are the different mechanisms being affected? And then somebody who is skilled, really somebody who has a lot of experience with this, needs to interpret that data. And then once you have a formal diagnosis of what's going on, then you can get some ideas on what the treatment ought to be. It's too complicated to just go, hey, Joey, you ought to just, you know, take your seizure medicine and your bipolar medicine and go see a family therapist. Like, yeah, okay. But that wouldn't hurt. But there's a lot here. Bonnie and Clyde. Wow. What a story. You robbed a convenience store. What were you guys up to?
Oh, God. I had a tendency whenever I would get a manic or whatever it was to, I would get into drugs. He is sober. He's been sober for about 6 years, but then he wasn't. So we snorted some, I don't even know what it was. And there was a closed convenience store and we literally just took candy just to take it.
Okay.
We're imagining you guys with assault rifles.
Yeah,
so.
Ski mask.
No, we're not hardcore.
You took some candy. You're okay.
It was hardcore, some, just stupid.
It's an Abba Zabba and Skittles. That was our crime run.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Joey, it's kind of interesting. You know, neuropsych testing is not cheap. That's the other thing. Oh. Now, what you might look into, you're in Dallas. You know, you might go look into like a university setting or a psychology school. Sometimes they have students that are learning how to do these tests, but they usually have professors supervising, and usually those can be very high quality people. So you can get it done for next to nothing that way, okay? If money's an issue, because okay. I know.
Thank you so much. This is, yes.
Yeah. And
it's a huge help for me because Yeah. I'm so sorry. They throw medicine at you.
I know.
And already, like, it's a lot of symptoms I've had for my whole life. And I'm, like, tired of messing with it.
Yes. It's called neuro. It's not just neuro testing. It's not just psych testing. It's neuropsych testing. And there's a lot of people that do that kind of work. You need to have the formal test. There's other things you can do too. There's sort of MRIs and spec scans and things. And people go, oh, look, the frontal lobe's not working. But how is that any different than what you already know? You know what I'm saying? You need to know what the functional the functional aspects of this are. Okay?
Wow.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm a huge, huge fan of Bad Friends.
Oh,
well, you clearly have good, your judgment is clearly still intact.
Yes, so, I think you're fine.
Go for it. Back to the convenience store.
Thank you.
But listen, do me a favor though. Once you, you know, go down the road with this a little bit, call me back. Let me know what's going on. Okay. It'd be very interesting to have some follow up.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right, Joy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, wow, we're covering a lot of territory today. You seem interested in this stuff too, which I'm indulging it a bit.
Yeah, no, I'm finding this fun. I don't like going to the doctor's office, and this has been a really positive experience.
Oh, good. Yes. So you expected to hate me like all doctors.
Not hate you, but I distrust doctors.
These days, there's so much distrust in the medical system because of all the COVID excesses, and I get it. I'm actually trying to work with people to come up with alternative systems and things to try to.
This is a good one.
Well, this is more educational, right? But I really want medical delivery systems that people can build trust with. Having said that, another interesting thing I observed about you, and I'm guessing it is all your years of reading music, you are a very fast reader. Very. Are you aware of that?
No. How do you tell?
Because you looked at Joey, not Joey's, the hemorrhoid one. You looked at the hemorrhoid one and you had read it long before most people can digest.
Oh, I didn't know that. And yeah, maybe sight reading.
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew that about myself.
Yeah, I'm betting that. Do you read books? Do you read a lot of material?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't, and I used to read a lot more than I do, but yeah.
You're a fast reader. Trust me.
That's a good diagnosis.
Yeah, it's a good thing to have. But and the sight reading, and now when you look at music, I'm just so curious about sight reading because I am so weak as a sight reader. It drove me. It really bothers me that I wasn't better trained that way. Really, I was one of these kids that would read the measure and then just memorize it and play it over and over and over again. I would never go back.
I
to
I knew
the
kids
music.
Like that when I was teaching. I teach summer band, and it would take me a while, but I'd figure out they weren't reading the music.
You have to break them of that immediately because it's a terrible habit, and it's screwed up my son is a keyboard player, and he can read music like Rachmaninoff. He reads and stuff, and I just. So jealous of that. But when you look at a sheet of music, can you read most of the page like straight off? You can like figure out what's going on very, very quickly.
Yeah, I read it like English.
Yeah. It's so fascinating.
We used to do sight reading in band, so we would like kind of train or practice. And
I get
you ever play Guitar Hero?
Yes.
I feel like Guitar Hero is just sight reading.
For you.
That's when you play a new song.
Well, the problem is people who play Guitar Hero feel like they're sight reading. That's the problem. Yeah. You're actually sight reading and feel like you're playing Guitar Hero. It's a little different. But the other thing that I'm terrible at, in case you noticed from my great performance there with Chase O'Donnell. My rhythm is off too. And part of that is a sight reading problem. I can't really figure out what's on the page rhythmically. And if you as a trumpet player, that must just be, you were doing percussion too, so.
Yeah, I that stuff I get. And I had a lot of training, but I don't know
she could probably,
half of
that,
these medical terms.
I mean, she could, that upper left-hand chord, she could probably read the one below it too. Not just read it, but sing it for you, right? Can you sight sing?
I have
also
relative pitch, so I don't know if I'm singing the exact note, but it'd be like, dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know. Something like that.
But you guys are laughing. But look, she was doing the flats. You know, she was adjusting. The next one was, is that a natural down there at the bottom of that second
round? I wish I had my trumpet. I would play it immediately.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that to be able to do what she just did is extremely difficult.
Here's on trumpet.
Now I've always wondered. I'm just fascinated by all this stuff. So you're doing the keys.
Nice visual keys? Joke for the podcast.
You call them keys on the trumpet. What do you call those?
Valves.
The valves. Yeah. But are you adjusting your? Yeah.
There's so many things like your embouchure, your tongue placement,
during each note.
Every note. Yeah.
And is that to get the right pitch? I mean, do the valve sort of get you to the pitch, and then the adjustments get you to the precise pitch?
Yeah, they all work together.
Yeah,
this is only three valves, and if you open it up, there's like holes in the valves. It's like a lock, like a combination lock. So it changes the airflow, and which changes the pitch. But when you're going like from a low note to a high note, like on a piano, you know. But with trumpet, you have to use your air and your tongue placement and your abs and the corners of your mouth. And
who's your favorite trumpet player?
I like Miles Davis a lot, but I also like Herb Alpert.
Do you put the thing over the bell like the way Miles Davis did?
Yeah, right now, because he started like electrifying the trumpet.
Yes.
And that's what I've been really interested in right now. But using guitar pedals and I have an electric mute.
That's later Miles Davis. A lot of people aren't aware of that whole era he was in.
He made it so, I mean, they call him Birth of Cool, but it was so cool because you get this like gritty electric sound, and nowadays there's a million effects you can add to a guitar, but you can just add that
to
any
instrument.
He was
brilliant, right?
Oh, yeah.
He would get up. There's stories of him, you know, sitting in the back room at Juilliard and just going, this is all bullshit. This is all so easy. We need to do something interesting.
His autobiography is nuts.
So let's, what are we doing? We're looking, oh, there's all the stuff that can be done with the trumpet.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. All right, let's get some videos in here. I want to give Jesse a chance to see some stuff before we wrap this thing up.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I want to see videos.
I like learning about this medical field.
Uh-oh. Bring her to rare disease. SPS, muscle spasm. Oof.
Two hours into it?
Yeah. Do they tell us what SPS is?
It doesn't say.
Super painful syndrome.
Exactly. Let me see here. SPS. What does that mean? Doesn't come. Yeah, it doesn't come. Oh, stiff person syndrome.
Just loosen up. Next one.
Yeah, rare progressive neurological disorder. It is pretty bad. That is trunk, torso, arms, legs, greater sensitivity to touch noise. They get these terrible spasms, hunched over posture, too disabled to walk or move. Oh my God. More likely
so
to be
scary.
Yeah. Associated with other autoimmune diseases. Oh, that's very sad.
Is that where ALS is in that area?
ALS?
Mm-hmm.
No, not that I'm aware of. ALS is a spinal column attack, you know, and it's bad.
Yeah, I had a friend who had that.
Oof, it's just terrible. It's one of the worst. Oh, here we go. Is this normal? Uh-oh, what is she going to do?
Oh, it's the sound.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of normal. That's normal. There's some air under your eyelid. That's all right. You're just burping your eyelid, essentially. Well done. Give me another one.
Get the air out.
By the way, I've been looking at... Oh, go ahead. Something is burning and scraping it.
Oh, no.
Eyelash? A wire.
It always shows up?
What? So I'm wondering... If she had that could be a suture, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe she had an eyelid procedure or an eye procedure even, and the suture kind of comes to the surface and starts scratching, and then she gets it out. So, yes, the ophthalmologist, my God.
Yeah, I wonder how many of those she's found.
I know, it's weird. I don't want to say about that. I've been watching, though, Christina's Instagram lately, and it's been very lively, gentlemen. Has a lot of that, is that going to YMH, some of that stuff she's playing there?
Some of it probably is, yes.
Okay. I may have you bring some of that on to the next show. I promised to share something this show that I have not yet, so let me wrap up with a story.
Oh, yes.
And that is, I was at the Skank Fest 2 weeks ago.
Oh, how was it?
It was skanky.
How was the Skank Fest?
It was very fun. And there were several. Did you hear about some of the extraordinary moments of the Skank Fest, guys?
Heard some of it.
I wonder if I should wait till it's just the booth boys to tell you all these stories. All right. Well, I'll tell you one story
now. Yeah, I want to hear it.
And one is that Corolla was supposed to be there with me, and he bailed out at the last minute. And so I started calling in favors from friends. And Andy Lederman helped
out. Yeah.
She's the best. And then Big Jay Okerson helped out.
Awesome.
And then Doug. And Andy was with Doug Stanhope. And I said, bring him too, because Stanhope's an old friend. And so the three of them were up there with me during this hour that was supposed to be with Corolla. And we had a nice time. And towards the end, and it was funny, and towards the end, Stanhope got a little frustrated. And he'd been swigging on a whiskey bottle the whole time, of course.
Yeah.
And had to pee. And he goes, I got to pee. Guys, we're like, nah, we're not quite done yet. Hang on a second, Stanhope. And he goes, fuck it. He stands up. He pees pees into three big beer cups.
Whoa.
And then sits them down on the table and sits back down. And then drinks it.
Drinks a sip?
He's drinking a glass of water.
I don't
water.
Know why a sip is different.
It is different. It is. That's what it was so extraordinary. He drank it down like it was.
He's just going to have to pee again.
Well, good point. Good point. I think it was for effect, and the mission accomplished, by the way.
How do you diagnose it?
Literally just took the microphone and went, that's it, guys. We are done. We're out.
That's honestly so badass.
It is badass.
I'm going to do it right now. Give me a cup. So,
for a woman to do it would be extra badass, I must tell you. So, and for Bobby, it would be just another day at the office.
Yeah.
But did you guys hear about that?
I didn't hear about that.
You didn't hear about it at the Skank Fest. Well, that was a shining moment at the Skank Fest.
A golden moment.
Golden moment is something that was talked about. There were a couple others that sort of ranked up there with it. I will tell, once I get to another Booth Boy show, I will share with them those stories. So we got some stuff to talk about.
Incredible.
Well, Jesse, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
It's been so fun. And thank you for having real interest in some of these calls, because these have been intense and interesting and multi-layered and stuff. It gave me kind of permission to lean into it a little bit. So,
oh, great. Yeah, I loved hearing your advice.
Yeah, I think we could really help some people this way.
I hope they get better. Yeah.
Yeah. And so where do you want people to go? Where can they find you other than the bad friends?
JetskiJohnson.com. I'm going to release some merch. If it's not already up when this comes out, it's going to come out soon for the holidays. And all my tour dates are on there. And yeah, I'll see you on the internet.
Great. And I would, are you going to be in Austin with the Bad Friends coming up anytime soon?
Not with Bad Friends, but I've been coming out here every month.
So oh, you're coming here? Do you go to the Mothership? And
I go to the Mothership, Kill Tony. I have a lot of friends here too, so I try to I travel a lot.
Just quickly, but Kill Tony, you must have at the beginning been a novice being criticized by the boys or attacked by the boys. Yeah,
I started from the bucket.
And now I guess you're on the panel.
Yeah, so I've done panel a few times now, but Tony's basically said, hey, if you want to play trumpet in the band, you're welcome anytime. So
oh, how fun.
It's really fun. I feel honored and grateful for that opportunity. So
I want to see that.
It's great. And then you get a microphone and I can chime in when I want. And
oh, my God.
It's like my brilliant. Second family.
That's combining your skills. You've been saying you're trying to figure out how to do both. There it is.
It's a dream. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Congratulations. And everyone else, we'll see you next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.